Okay, good morning. Continue to enjoy your breakfast. Feel free to get up and get more if you wish. I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's breakfast and cheer, Mr. and Mrs. Chaim Davis, Lila Nishmas, Itza Malka Bas Nachman Mendel, El Shalom, and Mr. and Mrs. Dovi Greenberger, Lila Nishmas, Maisha Shimon, Ben Pirchas, Alev HaShalom, Neshama Shehaven Aliyah. So today's topic is inheritance and wills, the Torah way. Someone asked me why I chose this topic. I'm not really sure why I chose it, but some reason it was niggling at my mind to go through the Inyan, and it's a very interesting topic. So there's a couple halakim, there's a couple of sections and categories to talk about, to coming to the lamaisa of it. The first thing is as follows. Number one, the Torah gives us what's called the Seder HaYerusha, and this is Gemara's and Masechta Bava Basra and other places as well. There is a Seder HaYerusha given over by the Torah. Now, sons, if are you going to go through each and every one, because it's not exactly what we're talking about today, but sons are Yairish everything from their father. Daughters do not get anything if there are sons. If there are no sons, then the daughters get that. If not, if there's no children, it goes to the father. It's all paternal. Now, when it comes to the Seder HaYerusha, the husband will be Yairish, he will inherit his wife. However, a wife does not inherit her husband. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because what happens with wills and estates is basically people want to divide and leave over part of their money to those who wouldn't necessarily get it according to the halakha. For example, a wife, daughters, etc. Now, but what plays? What? So we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to everything. So, but the idea is that there are certain of those relatives who are not halachically, they do not yerish, are not inheritors, however, or heirs. However, the Torah does take care of them to a degree, and that gives us a little inkling and a pesach to say that perhaps we are able to build on what the Torah wanted. For example, a wife. A wife does not inherit her husband's estate. However, that doesn't mean that she's left penniless. She actually gets a significant amount of support from the estate until either she remarries or she claims her ksuba. So she gets a lot. Now, that's what you write in your ksuba. Those ksubas people put up on their walls that everyone gets all excited about. Basically it says, if I die, this is what's going to happen. Oh, I divorce you, these are my obligations. So it's not, you know, people who read it, you see, it's not the, you know, most glamorous thing to put up on the wall, but, you know what I mean? But that's what it is. So now, what does it say there? It says the wife is taken care of. A wife gets a pihalaka from a ksuba. She gets food, she gets clothing, she gets shelter, she gets domestic help that she was accustomed to while her husband was alive, she gets medical care, she gets a lot from her ksuba. Now, that ksuba actually takes precedence over the Yerusha. That means to say that if there's no money left for the sons after the wife's ksuba is taken care of, they don't get anything. So, although she doesn't inherit, but the Torah didn't leave her totally outside with nothing. That's number one. When it comes, we'll talk about daughters in a minute. So, there is a Seder HaYerusha in the Torah. Now, the Seder HaYerusha given by the Torah is not, and this is a hashkafa type of thing, is not something that the Torah said, listen, if a person doesn't take care of his family, and he doesn't take care of his estate, and he doesn't leave a will, so then we'll default to this, what the Torah says to do. That's not really how it works. The way the Torah is really telling us is that this is the proper way of distributing a person's estate. Now, this manifests itself in a very interesting psak that the Ramah says in Hilchos Chayshe Mishpat. The Ramah says as follows. It was a story, I think it comes from a Chumash Hadeshin. There was a woman who gave the executor of her estate a bag of gold, and he told her to distribute it in the best manner possible. This is what she said. She didn't say how. In the best way. So I'm sorry, it's not a Trumasesh, a Mordechai. So they came to the Mordechai and they said, what's the best possible way of using your money? Is it Staka, Tyra? There's so many different things. So the Mordechai says, you know what the best way is? The Torah already told us what the best way is. The order of the Yerusha. The order of the inheritance, that's the best manner. The Torah's way is not last default. Adarab, the opposite. The Torah is telling us this is the best way. So the Mordechai says, you know what to do with that bag of gold? You give it to whoever inherits her, her sons, and whoever is the Seder Yerusha. Because the Torah's way is the best way. Even superseding Staka, Torah, and all of these types of things. So in the Hashkafa of it, of understanding what the Torah was doing here, the Torah was telling us that Al Pi HaTorah, this is what is the best way. And just like we understand other things in the Torah tells us this is the best way, our logic or our society may not exactly see eye to eye with the Torah, and sometimes we ourselves also have problems because of that. But that is the first thing of putting things in perspective, that the Torah, when it told us how to do it, this is the best manner possible.
I don't know.
The halacha is, you're not allowed to circumvent the Seder HaYerusha by disinheriting someone who Al Pi HaTorah is going to inherit you. That means to say, a person is not allowed to cut out halachic heirs from inheriting what they're supposed to get. However, many Paiskim differentiate between disinheriting someone and redistributing your estate, or a partial redistribution. So I'm not cutting someone out, but I'm distributing it a little differently. Is that usur or not? Again, now we're not in Hashkafa, we're in Halacha.
Is that person supposed to get anything?
So we're going to see. So in most cases, what happens is, when a person divides up their estate or makes a will, they're not usually cutting people out. They're usually redistributing it to perhaps people who would not be Yairishit in the Torah's order, and they want people, daughters, others, wives, for example, to get some of their estate, which they will not get al pi halacha according to the Torah. But they're not cutting out their sons. They're not saying they're not going to get anything. They're just redistributing it in a different way. So this is a machlokes, really. There's three opinions in the Paiskim what you're allowed to do in this regard. The first opinion is very chumradic. You're not allowed to make any changes. There's no changes. What the halacha is Bechor gets a double portion. Sons get, daughters don't get. Wife gets her ksuba, doesn't get Yerusha. That's it. That's the first shita. The second shita says no. You're allowed to distribute your assets as you wish, except, and this is a very interesting thing, as long as you leave over a small portion, and that portion you say, this is designated to be distributed the way the Torah wants it to be distributed. Let's say, now it's interesting, the shear that's given in halacha is 4 zuz. Which zuz with 4 gold coins. Now, how much that is, we'll see in a moment. But if you have 4 zuz from your entire estate, and you say, okay, from these 4 zuz, the Bechor is going to get a double portion, the sons are going to get, daughters are going to get nothing, you will follow the Seder HaYerusha. You have been Yaitse the Seder HaYerusha Al Pi HaTorah. Now, the next, however many zuz you have, the rest, that then you could partially redistribute as much as you want, and give it to whomever you want. That is the second shita. Now, what is 4 zuz? So it's very interesting. So if you make a cheshbon, some of the Mefarshim make a cheshbon, they say, well, you know, a ksuba that is for your wife is 200 zuz. Now, the concept of 200 zuz is the amount necessary to live for a year. So, if you divide, so 4 out of 200, so then that's about the amount that someone needs to live for a week. So, some of the Paiskim say that if you figure out what the 200 zuz is, you can figure out what the 4 zuz is. Now, the truth is, for a whole different shmooz and what a ksuba is, and maybe that's a share for another time, I heard Shurim Be'ion from Rav David Morgenstern Shlita, an old Clevelander as well. You remember him from Kels?
No, but I've heard his name.
Yeah, so he's one of the biggest Talmidim of Hakim of Rebbe Yashiv, and about a year or two ago I had a program where through video conferencing he gave Shurim to Rabbanim, and one of the things he gave was ksuba, and he gave all the different shitas of how much a ksuba is really worth. And it's fascinating because you're trying to figure out, you know, in the money and the gold and the silver that they were in those days, how much it's really worth. But the concept behind it is a year's support. So some of the Paiskim say that in Eretz Yisrael, might be a little different here, that's the Sfarim they were written, that $100 is equivalent to 4 zuz. Now, $100 here, I don't know if that's a week's support or not, but we're not talking about a lot of money. Even if a week's support for somebody, it's not a ton of money to put away from your estate. That's how some Paiskim say we go with the 4 zuz. Rav Moshe has 3 tshuvas about this, and each one he says a little bit different, but in each one he's seemingly going with a little bit of a higher threshold. In one place he says $1,000 is sufficient. In one place he says, he tells this, the people asking the Shaila, they should leave the house to the halachic heirs, which could be a lot more than that. And other places, he says, a fifth of the estate, which is interesting. That's already much more significant, 20%. A fifth of the estate should be set aside. But the idea here is that part of a person's estate should be set aside, according to the Shita at least, that should be done through the halacha, and then the rest you could do what you want with it. He writes over here, Rabbi Marburger, who's a dayan in Lakewood, so he says that he had a... he had a discussion with Reb Chaim Kohn, who's one of the big Dayanim in New York, and Rabbi Saul Berger as well, and it was concerning an estate that was valued, he says, in excess of $500 million. And the question was, how much should they set aside? And everyone said, agreed, $10,000 was enough. That's not a fifth. That's a very little, you know, $10,000, I didn't figure out the percentage, but it's a very little percentage. So, again, significant may not be relative to what the estate is worth. It might be significant just for what one needs.
How does that satisfy the halachic
So
how does a 4 zuz satisfying the halachic requirement?
The point is that part of the estate you should do alpi halacha, and then we let you redistribute the rest. Now, the first sheet that says you can't take any changes. Second sheet that says, as long as you were, like, the Yaitse Zayn, you were Yaitse, the Tyra was...
Where is that? Based on what?
Because you don't want to cut, since the Tyra said not to change the Yerusha, so therefore, as long as you're Mekayim, in part of your Yerusha, following the Halacha, the rest you can do what you want with. That's what the sheet tells.
And that's based on...
Okay, you have to go through this again. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. And the third shita is that it's only l'tzarech mitzvah you're allowed to redistribute for whatever reason. If you have a specific reason for a mitzvah, one would be allowed to do that. Now, what is the minig, the custom for many years, and we're talking about many years, not just here, with many hundreds of years, is that we rely on the lenient opinions that we permit, you're allowed to redistribute, at least partially. And this remains true today. However, even though we rely on this leniency, we still try to bring in other mitigating factors to try to help us out to make it more halachically acceptable. And for example, the wife. As we said before, we see clearly that the Torah wants the wife taken care of, because the Torah gave it a ksuba, and all those other things that come with it. So therefore, since there were deliberate measures that she should be taken care of, so if one feels that the ksuba is not enough support for his wife, it's insufficient, so you can't say he's really going against the Torah by giving her more, because you see, the Torah wanted her being taken care of. So, again, we're going with the shita you could do, you could redistribute it the way you want, but here we're throwing into the picture that who am I redistributing to someone the Torah wanted taken care of anyways. So that's not so bad, that's a little better. So if a person wants to give it...
So if the Torah wanted to decide that we wanted to refer to
That what?
Because the son, the Torah obviously wants the son to be inherit, not the one.
Okay, so good. So 1 second. So therefore, you're right. So therefore, if a person feels that his wife will not be taken care of, alpi, what the ksuba is going to give her, he's allowed to give her more money. But again, you're right. To cut out the real yarshim, that he shouldn't do. He should not cut out the real yarshim. The Torah wanted the yarshim to get. But if you want to now stop playing with how the balance is, so now he wants to put a little bit more money towards her. He can't say that he's going totally against the Torah. The Torah did want the wife taken care of. So,
on your previous example, it sounds like the Chachamim are totally cutting out the Yerushim with giving paltry amounts.
Which, no, again, 1 second. In which case, with the four zuz?
On your immediate opinion, the 500 zuz or the
10,000 zuz? No, start again. Let me clarify. All you're doing with that is, you are saying that this $10,000, let's just make it significant, $10,000, and this $10,000, let's say there are three brothers and two sisters. The sisters will get zero. The $10,000 will be divided into four portions, the Bechar taking two, and the other will have their two. Now, that doesn't mean that's the only money they're going to get. In the rest of the Yerusha, which is 409, whatever it is, 99 million, whatever it is, that I'm going to split it up equally amongst all my sons and all my daughters. So that I'm not jipping them out.
You're right, 100%.
I'm circumventing.
No, because
what the Torah meant was that as long as you're Yaitse, I could do the rest. These sheet is old. You're allowed to partially redistribute it. Okay, yeah, that's what they hold. You're right, that's what the first sheet holds. First sheet holds, you can't do it. Finish. Torah says it, it's over.
Can you?
Karen, you have daughters. Yeah.
Can you make investments?
Okay, well, guys, I'm not going to be able to get into all those details, but those could get very, very, right, there's other ways of doing it, with trust and things like that. That's what I mean? Yeah, those are right, 100%. Right, and we're keeping things very simple.
What happens
if you
then what?
She's the only child of you? Where's the Jewish? The daughters are Jewish. There's no sons. There's daughters are Jewish. Okay, now. Now, what about daughters? Daughters is an interesting thing. Daughters also are taken care of in the ksuba, by the way. Daughters, till they get married, there's parnasa, they are taken care of in the ksuba. But there's something else. There was something, you might remember this from certain places in Shas, called ksubas benin dichrin. Ksubas benin dichrin means as follows. A lady gets her ksuba. That means the husband says that if I die, so then you will get 200 zuz and whatever else you get. What happens if the woman dies first, the wife dies first, so her husband inherits her. So now, what happened was that people were holding back from giving dowries to their daughters. Why? Because they were afraid their daughter would die first, her husband would inherit her whole estate, even if she has children, her husband comes first, and he might have children from another wife as well. And when he dies, all of the money, or it's going to be at least split up amongst all of the children, including people that are not related to his first wife. So fathers were holding back and saying, why should I give my daughter too big of a dowry? It might end up totally out of my family. So Chazal came along and said that no, there's something called ksubas benin dichrin. That means to say, even if the wife dies first, when the husband will die, her children will be Irish for her ksuba. They made that takana. Now the Gemara says on that, how could you do that? You're going against the Seder HaYerusha, the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, you know what? But we need to marry off Jewish girls. So Chazal felt that it's so important that girls should have a dowry and be able to get married that they made a takana that yes, will circumvent the orders of Yerusha. So we see that, first of all, there's a precedent here when it comes to daughters of taking care of them, even though it might go against the Seder HaYerusha. Now, what ended up happening, it's interesting, because of that takana, I don't know why, but that takana, ksuvas ben adichrin, we don't do anymore. And it seems somewhere along the line, the parents started giving the daughters all of their estate and cutting their sons out. I guess they wanted to really marry them off. So it ended up backfiring on Chazal a bit. It's much later after the Gemara. And therefore the Minhag said they stopped doing it. However, what happened was there was a Minhag amongst Ashkenazim, and this might have been the continuation of Ksubas ben Adichrin, that they would actually give their daughters a portion of their estate. They would make them yarshim. It was called a shtar chatzi zochar. They would give their daughters a portion equal to half of what a son would get. They would be a half inheritor. So if a son's supposed to get $1,000, the girls would get $500. Now, not going into that exactly where that minig came from. It's based on this ksubas ben adichrin, but where it came from, it's a little murky how it came about, but this is a minig from the 13th century already. Hundreds of years we're talking about this minig exists called the shtar chatzi zochar. Later in the shir, we will get to understand how exactly it worked. But that there was such a minig. She would get half it. Now this excluded a couple things, excluded real estate, and excluded svara. Interesting thing. That went to the boys. Now, since this whole shtar chatzi zochar, why a half, is the shaila of why they decided a half. So if a person wants to follow that, he has a precedent of hundreds of years to follow shtar chatzi zochar. If a person wants to say, well, the whole point really was that the daughter should get a portion, I want to give my daughter an equal portion. Is that allowed or not? So most paiskim say it is allowed. The Chazanish and others, they're a little, in their day, it was more about equal rights and feminism and things like that. And they were a little nervous. They said, if you're giving your daughter an equal portion because you don't want to make a machlaikas in your family, that's fine. But if you're doing it because the outside world has had this effect on you that everybody's equal, boy, men and women are all equal, and you're doing it as a shita because why are they second class citizens? We have to make them equality and things like that. They were a little nervous that you see in the Torah the boys do have more schusim than the girls. So if you're coming to say the Torah's hashkafa is incorrect in your mind, that's a hashkafa problem. If you're doing it not that machlokes, then it's okay. And the Gesher Achayim writes that is an Indian gadol. He writes, Gesher Chaim is on the classic Svarim in the last 50-100 years on Hilchas Avelus, and he writes over there, a person should give his daughter an equal chelek because too many families have been broken up over machlokes, and therefore that's the bottom line. The bottom line is a person should avoid all machlokes. Still want to try with the Dalzism, with everything. Shai. Right. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Now, we're going to have to skip a little bit here. The person shouldn't just quickly favor a particular child, the Gemara says, because Yosef was favored by Yaakov. We ended up in Mitzrayim and Golis and all types of things. So you got to be careful in favoring one child over the other. If children are a Rasha, Rishayim, could you cut them out of your will? So the halakha is that you should not, because you never know. His children might become Balei Tshuva, be Tzadikim. You never know. There was a famous court case in Chicago in the 80s or something like that. A guy named Max Feinberg or something, who had a very large estate that no one knew about till he died, and some of his children intermarried, or all of them, 4 out of 5 intermarried. So the ones that the girls that intermarried, so their children are still Jewish. The boys, obviously, the children aren't Jewish. So they cut out all anyone who intermarried. They cut all their children out of their will. And the grandchildren went to court in Illinois to contest the will, and they say since the Illinois law doesn't say you can do such a thing, etc., etc., so they cut them out of the will, and the courts actually upheld the will that the Feinbergs had written. However, you would think that is championed as Tzidkis, one, they cut out the Rishayim from the will, but really Alpi Halacha, although what they did worked, but it wasn't really the thing to do, because especially in our day, we know that just because someone who is not Shomer Torah Mitzvah today doesn't mean that tomorrow they might not change, or their children, and you know, in the olden days, interesting that it wasn't necessarily such a thing. It was, you say, the children are Rishayim. Yeah, so the grandchildren, or they're also Rishayim. Will they come back? There wasn't such a big precedent for people. There's such a thing of Balei Tshuva, but there wasn't such. And nowadays, we know that it's Ma'asim Mechal Yayim, people change. So therefore, if someone's halakhic heir is a Rasha, to cut them out is not so simple. So now, let's go now to the wills. When it comes to a secular will, the thing with the will is, in order for a will to work and to transfer assets, in halakha we need kinyanim. Now, secular will does not really rely on kinyanim. He just decides how he's going to distribute his estate. Now the problem is as follows, that when it comes to the halacha, the minute one passes away, al pi halacha, all of the Yerusha takes effect at that moment. That means to say, the minute he dies, his bechar gets double, and his sons get everything. They are actually kaina et al pi halacha. So if a person wants to change things, they have to figure out a way that the halachic Yerusha should not take place. So there's different ways that the Pais can come along and try to figure out how a secular will may work in halacha. And again, these concepts, I can't go into each and every one of why they do or don't work, but the concept are as follows, and again, you might remember them from learning a different thing. There's something called the matna shchiv meira. A person on his deathbed, he gives things away, he doesn't need any kinyanim. They're just automatically with him. Chazal said, if you're going to start making him crazy with kinyanim, what's going to happen? He's going to get a little to tumult, and he's dying right now. He might die a little early because of that. You'll have killed him. So Chazal wanted to make it easy for people on their deathbeds to give things away. They didn't need kinyanim. So, but a will is usually not on a person's deathbed. It's usually taken care of long before. So it's hard to say it's a matnas shchiv meira. There's also a concept of mitzave machmas misa. If a person thinks he's dying, not a shchiv meira, but he gives over different things that he wants done. So maybe a will is considered mitzava machmas misa. But this is also problematic because mitzava machmas misa, there's many different limitations of how and where it works. It has to be that, we'll go into the ideas, but there's many different conditions necessary for something to be called mitzava machmas misa. And a will that a person takes care of, even if he thinks he's going to die, but usually all those conditions are not really taken care of. What about just minute? There's a concept in halacha. We talked about this during, between Mincha Maariv during the week, that certain kinyanim are dependent on the custom of the place. If in the diamond district you shake hands and say bracha v'atzlacha, that's a kinyan. Situmta. So it's called situmta. It's called, that's the minig of seicharim, of business people. So maybe halachic wills should just be because this is the minig. Some want to say like that. The Ravaz wants to say that it's, since there's a custom to use a will, so that works. The problem with that, and this is where you start with the problem, is the custom to use the will is usually after the person dies that the will is enforceable. At that point, the Yerusha has taken place. It's a little late to start bringing in Kinyanim later. So that's a problem. We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to that. No. However, there is an issue. Rav Moshe says this, and the Achiezer of Chaim Moshe writes this, that there was a custom in Klal Yisrael to rely on secular wills. They said, go figure out why, I don't know what to tell you, but Minig Yisrael, they write. And therefore, Ein Lefakfek. So, they might say like this. We'll get to the Tzvar in a moment. But they do say that there was a custom in Klal Yisrael that a secular will is halachically enforceable. And Rav Moshe says that the reason is as follows. He says that the reason is because you don't really need a kinyan. Why do you make a kinyan on something? What's a kinyan? Let's say, how does a will work with a kinyan? That means to say that I want to obligate myself to do what the will says. So if I make a kinyan, in, like I pick up a yarmulke and a chalipin, so the whoever gave it to me, so in return, I obligate myself, like when you got married and you makabel kinyan for your ksuba. What were you doing? You were saying that in return for that yarmulke the Eidim gave me, I am obligating myself to whatever it says in the ksuba. So you want to obligate yourself to whatever it says in the secular will. So Ramesha says that a kinyan is just necessary to make sure that when you do it in your mind, it's called gemiras das. You're doing it, and this is the final thing that you want to do. So a kinyan makes that it's a real thing. He says, but if you know you have gemiras das, and you know that you want it to work, you don't need the kinyan, says Ramesha. And therefore, since the custom is secular wills are enforceable, so when you write a will, in your mind, you have been gemir das for it should work, and therefore, he says, you don't need a kinyan, and therefore, everything in there you're obligated, or they are obligated to do. That's what Ramesha says. Now another argument is Dina de Malchusa Dina, secular wills and law. But the problem with Dina Malchusa Dina is that Dina de Malchusa Dina is usually only in matters either where the government has a vested interest or it's for somehow for the public good. You know, running through a red light could be your eye on Dina Malchusa Dina. Why? Because there's no red light, there'll be accidents, and it's for the good of the country. But between two Jews, right, that the government doesn't have any vested interest, there's no good between two Jews, that means the father and the children, Dina the Machusa, Dina Pasha doesn't apply. So, that's a different thing, but then what?
Meaning if a Machlegas gets dragged out in secular court, it costs the state lots of money.
It costs the state lots of money?
Court cost.
Well, no, why are we going to court? If we do properly, we don't end up in court. Dina, right, that opposite, right? There's the concept of kibud avim. Parents want this to happen. It's not so simple either, because over here, kibud avim perhaps doesn't apply. They don't. The parents don't get anything. There's another thing also. Kibud avim really has to be, the expenses have to be paid by the parents. Here, you're asking the children to lose money because kibud avim. They're not mechuyev to do that. So kibud avim may not apply. So there's a lot of different things that are thrown out. To make a secular will enforceable in halacha, but each one has its problem. Again, Ramesha says and Achiezer says the minute was to be simek on it, but halachically figure out exactly why that is true is not so simple. Now, one of the things is there's a concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. There's a mitzvah to say what a mace, to do what a mace wanted, and some say that's what a secular will is. There's a mitzvah if the mace said he wants this to happen, he wants it to happen. That could be where Ramesh is coming from a little bit, and the Achi Ezra as well. The problem is that again, there's a lot of different things for mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. Number one, there has to be direct instructions to the heirs, to the children. Usually a person writes a will, the children don't always know what's in it till it's opened. It's not a directive to them. Number two, some say it has to be given to a third party by mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. That means if I give myself to a third party, now some say an executor is equal to a third party. Now that might make a difference if he's actually one of the children or someone else. So again, there's a lot of different, now mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames also doesn't apply to real estate. So you have different problems. So halakha l'maisa, secular wills, there's reasons why we could uphold the minhag that there is up here, Ramesh and Achiezer, that the person could do it. However, if we could find a way to make it halachically acceptable, it will be much, much better for us. So now, what is the way to do it? So again, you might remember a lot of these ideas from different places of learning, Sefta Gittin and others as well. The first thing, the easiest thing is transfer everything mechayim. Give it all for while you're alive. Only problem with that is most people don't want to give away everything while they're alive. They want to hold on to it till they die. They only want to give it after they die. So they want to give it. What?
But they could.
Oh yeah, you could give. You could, yeah.
In the market.
What?
The market
fluctuates. In what? In which
market? Would you give it before the person dies?
Between not stocks, things like that. Okay, that's the thing. It might not work for everything. You're right. It might not work for everything. Well, let's say a person's house. He wants to give it. He wants to give it equally. So he gives it to his children. He could do that. Problem is, it's not his house anymore. It's his children's house. Let's say he wants to go sell it.
Is he putting it in a trust?
I'm not going to trust him. I'm going about a simple thing. A guy wants to get, we're trying to figure out halachic ways for him to give over the Yerusha in a way that he wants, not relying on the secular will on its own. So he can make a kinyan, mechayim, and finish. Then it belongs to his children.
Isn't that but doesn't give any that the parents or the father shouldn't be?
Okay, so they won't be homeless. We'll find an apartment somewhere. It'll be very nice. I mean, let's say the father decides one day he wants to sell the house. It's not his house. He gave it to his kids. It's not so simple. Most people want to retain their assets till they die. They're not really ready to give it all away and then be selling it on their kids. I don't know. I'm not sure if it worked out well in all cases like that.
If a person wants to protect his wife, so to speak, make sure she's taken care of, right? So he can write... He can give her a certain amount.
He can give in her lifetime
and his lifetime. What will happen with it is that,
and we'll see that in a second. It's another drawback to that approach is that he can only be machna things that he owns at that moment. In other words, if he's machna today, so what he earns tomorrow, that's not in that kinyan. So when he dies, and you can't say a third of his estate goes to her, a third of his estate that was kayim when he made the kinyan 20 years ago.
But if he bought real estate in her name.
Oh, her name's a different story. Then it's hers. Right. But then the person has a estate. He has money, he has tax, he has all these things. And he wants a third to go to his wife. So he makes a kinyan and he's makna a third to his wife. It's a third of that moment. He lives another 10 years, he makes another $100 million. Those $100 million were never nikna to her.
Why?
Because the kinyan can only work.
No, but it's Dabashalai Balayla. The third that she got at that moment.
Right, that moment. She got a third of what. No, if that appreciates, but what about the rest that he earned? He earned more. He made more money.
In other words,
thinks he's kinda later and all those things. So you don't want to make a kinyan now. So we know from the Gemara, you can make a kinyan that I'm waking it today, but it should only apply when he dies. But it's l'mafreya mehayoyim. It's going to happen from today. So again. In this case, you're not allowed to sell anything. In other words, you hold on to your assets, but since when you die, it's going to go to your children, you're not allowed to sell them. So you're back to the problem of, you can live in your house, but you can't sell your house. So you can have a problem with that.
Are you allowed to stipulate in any of these rules that a minute before I die,
Now, so you'll say, okay, contingent on the fact I don't change my mind. So if I want to sell something in the middle, I could. So that's where you get into this other problem we said before. You still could only do this with things you own right now. Things that you're going to buy in the future, the Avishal Elmi can't do that. And besides for that, a Kenyan Sudr, we mentioned this in the share also, Simon Chamarev, a Kenyan Sudr doesn't work on everything. Cash, debt, stocks, the Khalifin doesn't work with those. So you're not going to be able to make a Kenyan on those. So it's not going to work for those. So, the way that the Paiskim came out, and this has all the way back to what we said before, the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. That Shtar Chatzi Zachar that was a minig from Ashkenazim from hundreds of years to give their daughter a half. How did they do that? So, the way they did it is as follows. And now we do it as a Shtar Zachar Shalim because we want to give her an equal amount. And that is as follows. A person writes a secular will and he divides up his estate the way he wants it to be divided up. No problem. And api Ramosha, api Bechiezer, that in itself is enough. But what he does is as follows. He writes a halachic will addendum. And there's Mr. Dome is here and I've had from him also this type of document in working with other people on their estates. What's the halachic will? The way a shtar chatzi zachar worked was as follows. Let's a very simple case. The daughter is not supposed to be Irish, so he wants to give his daughter a portion of his Yerusha. So what he does is as follows. He obligates himself. He makes a debt to his daughter. In the amount in excess of what the Yerusha is going to be. And this is as follows. Again, a person has the Yerusha, very simple. $100, he has to be Irish, he has a son, and he has a daughter. Now, pi halacha, his son gets 100, she gets 0. He wants them to be split up 50-50. So he says as follows. He's mekabel on himself that he owes his daughter $200. And that debt will take place one moment before he dies. So the moment before he dies, he now owes his daughter $200. His whole estate is only worth $100. But he puts the condition in, and he says that if the heirs of my estate are going to follow my will of giving my daughter 50-50, then she will be Michael the debt. She'll be Michael the debt. So therefore, in that case, so the son is going to come along and say, ah, my sister, she gets nothing. I know the halacha, give me the whole 100. She'll pull out a shtar that says, sorry, but if you don't want to do what he says, I get 200, which since there's only 100, I get it all. So it's better in his interest to follow and give up from his Yerusha, so to speak, following the will, in order that that debt will not take place. Now, this is what is used. Now, there's different ways of doing this. It's either sometimes the debt is to the non-halachic beneficiaries, and sometimes it's to a third party. You just got to be careful with that third party that he doesn't want to collect the debt. It's got to be someone you trust. You know what I mean? But I'm going to go on to legalities. There's a lot of different tznoim throughout this. Now, you might say, one second. So let's say there's a whole bunch of brothers and sisters. So one of the brothers says, you know, what do I need to follow the will for? I'll go to my sister and I'll say, Herzachayim, we're not going to follow the will. You collect your debt and then we'll split it. So forget everybody else. I'll get my. So there are tznoim, they thought of this, there are tznoim in there that if that happens, so then the debt is only collectible from the one who challenged it. Everybody else gets the rest. So he doesn't end up gaining. Now, does that mean you can't beat the system? You can always beat every system if someone wants to beat the system. However, so this is the way it's done. And in this way, this was how the Shtar Chatzi Zachar worked, and now this is how we do it as the Shtar Zachar Shalom. Now, I want to just point out something that we talked about last night. Just, we happened to get up to that last night in the Shir B'Tzim Mincha Ma'ariv, and there's a concept called Asmachta. When you make a Tznai, that is something you never think is going to happen, so in your mind you don't really want it to happen. That means to say, if you do something and say, you know what, if it rains tomorrow, if it's going to rain in 5 minutes, it's beautiful day out there, rain in 5 minutes, I'll give you $1,000. And then, boom, your luck, it rains. You never didn't think you thought it was going to rain. So that's called an asmachta. You don't have to pay it. When everything is beyond, that's how gambling works. Maybe gambling might be geneva because it's asmachta. The people are always there to win. They're not there to lose. So they don't really have to pay out. So over here, why is this not asmachta? Why is this not asmachta? If they challenge my will, I want to give $200 million to a third party. Why is this not asmachta? So it's an interesting thing. And this was the Chachmei Sfarad, it's brought out. They are the ones who said this thing. And they said as follows. There's a difference between saying that if it will happen, I will pay. That's an asmachta. In this case, this is how we set it up here. The debt will happen. The debt's going to happen the minute before he dies. If certain tznayim are fulfilled, they will be meichel. That's not asmachta. Asmachta means that if it'll happen, let's say, he could have said like this, if my heirs challenge my will, I want my daughter to get $1 million. That's an asmachta. He doesn't think his heirs are going to challenge his will. But if he says, my daughter's getting $1 million, if they challenge it, then she will be Michael. The Chachmei Svara said that's different. You can think about it, but that's the Chachmei Svara brought down in Shulchan Aruch, why it's not Asmachta. So between the Chachmei Svara's idea of why you could make such a condition, and it's true, and this idea of the Shtar Chatzi Zachar, which we now put into play as Zachar Shalem, so that is how one should properly do their will. Now, I didn't get into a lot of things. There's a lot of things with joint accounts and trusts, and all different types of stuff that are not always tully in the dinim of Yerusha. Joint accounts are not Yerusha. She owns the accounts. Joint homes are in both names. They might not be in Yerusha because they're just hers. She's a shutup in it. That's not Yerusha. Or different types of things. Trusts are like that as well. So there's a lot of nitty gritty, and if a person wants to do things properly, obviously you have to see someone who's a lawyer, but not a lawyer. A lawyer who is also involved and understands what the halachas are, or at least get a rav involved who also is bakan learns and understands these halakhas, so it should be done properly. Because I just want to point out that we said many reasons why a secular will may be enforceable in halakha. But you might be happy with in halakha it should be enforceable. But your yarshim, the ones that are losing out, they may say, one second, very nice, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis, I have four reasons why that doesn't work. They might go to Beis Din and say, hello, you know, it's very nice, my father said a secular will is enforceable in halakha, but I have 14 kashas on it, I heard a shir about it. That's not enforceable in halakha. So you have to realize, just because you're comfortable with it, doesn't mean it's going to work out at the end, that the yarshim are not going to contest it. So therefore, we try to do it in the best way possible, and again, the whole point is here, to keep shalom amongst those who are yarishit. Everyone should get what they're supposed to get, or what their parents or whomever wants them to get, and the schutz of following the halacha, we should be zeicha that there should be no machlokes.